We're going to turn things up a notch here a bit at the One Hotel in Brooklyn with our next guest, who needs no introduction, but I'm paid to give them, so I have to. Sam Bankman-Fried is a man that you know well by the term SBF, the founder and CEO of FTX. Just some interesting notes that I'm sure everybody here in person knows. But at 29 years old, SBF is the youngest billionaire in the U.S. and the quickest to reach the Fortune 400 list. But I like giving him a different moniker, not only one of the nicest people in crypto, but one of the smartest as well. SBF, thanks for taking the time out of your day down in the Bahamas to join us. How are you doing over there?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
I want to get started here with just how much is going on at FTX, because there's a bit of a joke in the crypto space that if you were a crypto reporter, a full-time job would be covering all the things that are going on there. You've raised more than $1 billion on the year here at FTX US. You're building out the NFT space, adding that capability there, as well as derivatives as well, the first through your acquisition of Ledger X. Talk to me about, I guess, all the money that you've put behind raising the FTX profile, not only Tom Brady, Steph Curry, the Miami Heat Arena, also UC Berkeley. There have been a lot of deals. So how do you measure, I guess, all of the money that you've put into that effort? What are you seeing? Is it all just user growth that you're looking at, or how are you measuring it now?
So there's some user growth, but that's not the biggest immediate goal of it. You know, we are really coming from behind on a name recognition perspective. We've been around for about 2.5 years. It's a lot less long than the other major players in the, you know, crypto exchange business. And, you know, we don't have tens of millions of users. We certainly don't have 100 million users. And what this means is that, you know, when sort of someone is looking to get involved in the crypto ecosystem for the first time, you know, especially 6 months ago, there's a good chance they hadn't even heard of FTX. And what that means is that if we just buy a lot of Google ads, I don't know, there's sort of like, you know, crypto company you've never heard of runs an ad on Google or Facebook. It's not very compelling. You probably assume it's basically just a scam. And sort of more generally, the sort of brand that you need to engage with consumers, we didn't have. And so rather than, you know, just try to mass acquire a ton of retail users with advertisements that probably wouldn't have worked, what we've really been focusing on is trying to communicate to the country and the world, like, who we are as a company. And, you know, I think that means something that's punchier, something that's more compelling, and something that says more about us than, you know, we can usually fit in an advertisement. That's really been the goal of a lot of the partnerships that we've been forming. And I think we've had really, really striking success with that. And, you know, witness the fact that you can felt compelled to ask about it here, right? It's sort of like one example of just the reach that I think that those have had.
Yeah, and it's not just the ads. I mean, it's also the capabilities you've been adding, as I said, kind of recently, adding on NFT capabilities here as well. What's been kind of the early takeaway in what person that is drawing in crypto versus maybe the people who came along first in the Bitcoin and ETH wave back in 2017?
There are similarities. And in particular, there are similarities to the people who have been here for a while. You know, NFTs have had an absolute explosion in usage over the last 6 months, but it is still predominantly driven in most places by the crypto industry rather than by newcomers. There is some excitement from newcomers, and there's a huge amount of excitement from partners to build out new products involving NFTs, which I think could be really, really exciting. But I don't think that it has yet caused, you know, millions of people who had never touched crypto before to engage, at least not with FTX. I think the biggest engagement that we've been getting at the beginning is from existing users of crypto, whether or not they're FTX users. I think that's going to change over time, but I think what that's going to take is NFTs starting to get integrated into other systems in people's lives, whether they're tickets, in-game items, or other things.
I guess the one similarity, too, between all this is the ability to make a lot of money. And that's really what draws people into crypto. I think if you're not in it, there is one project that you've been a pretty early backer of, Solana. I know you've been talking to them, and obviously they've got a lot going on in Lisbon this week. When you look at that, though, it's up almost 12,000% over the last year. And when we talk about projects like that in terms of efficiencies of scale and speed, you know, a lot of people point to whether or not that might take away from potential upside in Ethereum. I mean, how do you look at maybe how that battle plays out over the long term? Obviously, in the short term, when everything else is in a bull market, everything's going up, that's one thing. But does it maybe cap the long-term upside from some of the other competitors to Solana and then also to Ethereum?
It's a good question. And, you know, there's always going to be both collaborative and competitive forces between different crypto projects. You know, we see this with, you know, us and a lot of other exchanges. And you know, we always try and play the collaborative card when we can. I think what I would say is that what I see as the biggest upside of Solana is, you know, the potential ability to scale to a point where it can service an absolutely enormous number of users and an amount of information transactions. You know, if you think about like what does a mass scale application business or something like that look like, you know, you're talking about hundreds of millions to billions of users. You're talking about millions of transactions per second. You're talking about billions to trillions of dollars. You know, that millions of transactions per second, it really is a requirement of almost any mass scale system. And so I think that Solana is one of the few currently existing public blockchains that has a really plausible roadmap to scale to millions of transactions per second at, you know, fractions of a penny per transaction, which is the scale that you need for this. I think that is not where a lot of other blockchains have been focusing, including Ethereum. And, you know, I think what that means is that to the extent that you know, the goal of a blockchain is to service a billion users, absolutely, I think that there are competitive instincts there. I think you could imagine collaborative instincts to the extent that other blockchains are focusing on a more concentrated, smaller type of usage.
The other interesting thing, too, I guess, in the run-up, as you've pointed out, there's been a lot of institutional interests in the project. And I guess that's one thing that might change in terms of the speed at which institutional investors are going deeper and deeper into the crypto space. You know, it took a long time for them to dip a toe into Bitcoin, maybe a little bit shorter to dip into ETH. But now as you see that interest from institutional investors shape up, how big of a driver is that, not just for Solana, but for some of these other projects as well, in what we could see in how quickly these projects do pop?
So mark to today, like if you look at sort of like all of history up to today, frankly, actual institutional adoption and inflows themselves have not driven very much. Now, the anticipation of them has, but the inflows themselves have not yet materialized. You talk to most major institutions, they will tell you they're getting into crypto and they will tell you that it is not happening tomorrow. It's going to take, you know, a year for many of these places, sometimes multiple years. The amount of work that a compliance department has to do to get acquainted with the cryptocurrency ecosystem, become comfortable with it, is fairly significant, a lot of these players. So it has not been driven by the actual inflows themselves, although the anticipation of those has been a huge factor. All of that being said, the world is speeding up. It's speeding up in every way. And it's going to be speeding up in these ways as well. And so I think the sort of timeframes that we imagine transformations happening on, you know, both in terms of what technology can accomplish, the adoption it can get, and the institutional support it can get, I think every year, those timeframes shorten a little bit. And we see things turning over faster and faster and getting adopted faster and faster.
Well, it's been a good call so far. I want to ask you, though, about maybe the flip side of good calls. Let's talk some bad calls. Obviously, it might be hard to think of an example here, but we've been chatting with a lot of experts today about their experiences in crypto. I'm curious if there's one that maybe stands out to you as a big crypto mistake that you made in your career, and I guess if there isn't one that you'd point to, what you see from newbies in the crypto space is one that maybe people getting in should avoid.
I mean, so the biggest mistake I made, which is only sort of an answer to the question, is not getting involved sooner. And I mean, this is something that I think about now, and that is, you know, I had a friend who built a Bitcoin arbitrage bot in 2012, 2013, something like that. I kind of checked out. It was kind of cool. Nothing came of it. 5 years later, we would get into crypto together and end up founding FTX together. You know, sort of imagine what would happen if we'd sort of chased down that rabbit hole much earlier. But I think putting that aside, there are a lot of things that I think have taken me a while to really understand. And I like certainly wish that I had earlier. I think that there's a lot of opportunities in the space that did not gel to me until the last year. I think one of them is thinking about what a consumer financial experience could look like, what a comprehensive one could look like. I think one of them, frankly, is just understanding some of the regulatory regimes that we see. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity to offer new innovative products in a licensed manner. And I think I'd been underestimating that earlier. And I think that was certainly, certainly a mistake. And you know, we could have begun on some projects earlier, I think, than we did. And then I guess there's one other thing. I wrote something about this a few days ago. There have been a lot of like annoying quirks of FTX's user registration process. Every time that I try and walk myself through it, I'm annoyed at something. And just things like you got to enter your address 2 or 3 times, and that like takes a while, and there's like no good reason for that. And lots and lots of variants of that, of just like a process that was not nearly as sort of tightly constructed as it could have been. And the sort of like hits of that causes on user adoption are pretty significant, right? Like every extra 10 seconds that takes someone to go through a process, there's a chance that they just drop off, especially if it seems sort of frustrating and silly. And this is something we could have addressed this earlier. It's not that hard to at least do a decent job of this. I think we're starting now too. We've made a number of changes in the last couple of weeks. But you know, I sort of wish that we had taken that seriously earlier, and a lot of people had brought this up to us.
I feel like maybe some people listening to that as a big mistake might give you a pass on that one. And they also might point out, you know, that it's hard to think you having crypto mistakes, just kind of given the upside and the wealth that you've built. You've been pretty outspoken about what you intend to do with that wealth, and you take a long-term view about the charitable giving prospects that you're looking forward to doing. It's been strange to watch people maybe critique that aspect of it too, saying, look, he's built all this wealth. Where is he going to give it to, and why hasn't he given more? Comparing it to about a $15 donation to a Salvation Army bin, if you want to look at it that way. Also, millions of dollars is more than basically I think anybody in this room has ever donated in their life too. So, I mean, when you look at the long-term take that you're giving for charitable giving, how are you developing that thesis and what you want to do to create lasting change? And when can we expect maybe some of those big announcements? I know you're going to be talking to Give Directly next month.
Yeah. So, you know, I've started giving something. I've probably given 30 million or so this year. Some of that has been, I think, talked about more than others. But, I think one thing to note is that, I'm not super liquid as far as these things go. You can sort of look at mark-to-market, valuations and things like that. But all of my worth, so to speak, is just wrapped up in like the equity valuations of like the companies. And so, particularly like FTX's valuation, which means that like, the actual money I have in my bank account is certainly under a million, certainly well under that. So that certainly is one limitation on giving speed. But I think frankly, another thing, is just, making sure that I'm really excited about where it's going. And I think that the difference between a good and a great place to give is absolutely enormous. It's orders of magnitude. And so what are some of the things I've been looking at and I think sort of investigating more and I've started giving to? One of them is around biosafety and pandemic preparedness. If you look at things that could potentially have massive negative impacts on the world and our future, we are unfortunately getting to a place as a society where bio risks are amongst them. Every year biotech gets more powerful, and this has a lot of really amazing benefits, and it also has some side effects. And one of those is the amount of damage that we can do accidentally to the world. I think that one thing we've seen over the last few years pretty conclusively is that we absolutely are not ready for a pandemic. We are not ready for you know, basically any bio risks. And I think basically no countries have managed to like handle COVID well. And the next one could be worse. Like this, you know, it's not the most lethal disease ever. Despite its sort of massive spreading, you know, what if it were worse? Would we have been able to handle it as a world? Like I wish that I were more confident in that answer than I am. So I've been doing some, I mean, a lot of research on this, a lot of talking to people, and some work on, arguing for, more preparedness for the next pandemics. And, I've done a lot of work in DC on that, and have given a bunch to that. Because I think that's one of the most important things that we can be working on now as a society in terms of, things which are potentially world-changing and also potentially actionable, where we can actually do things today, to help prepare for that.
Yeah, and at scale, as we talked about in terms of, the wealth that's been built there. So we'll be watching for when those developments happen. To close here, though, Sam, in terms of, I guess, some of the bold calls that we've seen out of you, clearly some of them have been right, most of them have been right here in 2021. When you look ahead to 2022, though, what would be, if you can leave us with a bold call for crypto, one thing specifically that you'd come out and say, I'm feeling pretty confident about this happening next year?
I think that we're going to see, I don't know exactly what time frame, and then I want to be cautious about saying that it will necessarily happen in a year. But I think that we're going to see some real changes in the US crypto landscape. And I think this is going to be interfacing heavily with regulators. I think that part of this is going to be licensed activity, which will hopefully be coming online. We're optimistic that FTX US derivatives will be a part of that. I think part of this is going to be work with the SEC on, tokens that may be securities and, registrations and regimes related to that. If you look at, I think sort of one stark thing here, if you look today at the global volume distribution in crypto, it's 90%+ offshore. A fairly small fraction is in the United States. If you instead look at something vaguely like IP production, right? The majority of token projects of top token projects at least, have been founded by US citizens. A lot of the other projects have as well. There's a pretty big discrepancy right now between the actual adoption of crypto and a lot of the development of it. And I'm optimistic that we're going to see a healthy, strong, and innovative U.S. crypto scene developing in concert with regulators over the next few years.
Well, I know you've been having a front row seat chatting with all those regulators yourself. It's been busy times here this year. Sam Bankman-Fried, the CEO and founder of FTX, joining us from the Bahamas. Appreciate you taking the time here to chat. Thanks again.
Thank you.